Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened, a weekly history podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season. Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that Lord Culpeper was finally forced, after years of dragging his heels, to go to Virginia where he would serve as the governor. He was a pampered lord who was used to the luxury life of English court, and he hated being in the colonies. He had been chosen to be the governor by the king and didn't really want to be there other than to collect money from a bunch of scams he had going on. And he also got a lot of money just for being governor. Seeing as the office of governor of Virginia was nothing more than a way for him to make money, he didn't really care to make the assembly follow the king's orders. He mostly didn't want the king to be mad at him and take away this sweet gig where he made all this income. So when the first year's business was done in Virginia and the assembly had closed, Governor Culpeper headed straight back to England. He did this even though the king had told him not to come back unless he was summoned. But the riches and lavishness of England called for him. While he was in Virginia, he hadn't done much to help the people with the issue of poverty. We covered in previous episodes that the low price of tobacco had caused rampant poverty all over the colony. England had created a couple of laws years before this called the Navigation Acts. The Navigation Act said that the colonists couldn't buy or sell from anyone other than England or English colonies. This meant that English ships coming in could sell their clothes, tea, sugar, and whatever else for extremely high prices because there was no competition. And they did. Sometimes they sold items at two or three times what they sold it for before the Navigation Acts, because the colonists had no choice. There was nobody else that they were allowed to buy from. It also meant that the Virginia farmers couldn't sell their tobacco to other countries in Europe. Those countries had paid high prices for their tobacco. Now, they could only sell it to England, and England paid them pennies for it. Everyone in Virginia had a tobacco farm. The colony had tried and failed many times to produce things other than tobacco, but the land either couldn't produce much of anything else, or they couldn't compete with Europeans who had been practicing other crafts for centuries. Luckily, the people in Virginia were almost entirely farmers. Everyone had their own supply of food, milk, and water, so famine wasn't a possibility. However, they were extremely poor. They couldn't afford clothes and other necessities for daily living. In addition to that, people were falling into debt. They were borrowing money to live off of and had no hope of paying it back. On top of that, the Virginia government had been charging high taxes and either spending the money on terrible forts that never really worked to protect anyone, or keeping a lot of the taxes for themselves. This poverty, caused by farmers being forced to sell their tobacco for next to nothing, had been going on for decades. At one point, the colonists tried to get Maryland and North Carolina to agree that all of them should stop growing tobacco for certain parts of every year. This would mean less tobacco available, and that, in turn, would mean that the English ships that came to buy it would have to compete with each other over who gets to buy the small amount of tobacco that was grown. This would make the English buyers pay more for it to beat the other English buyers. In a previous episode, we discussed how Governor Berkeley himself rode to Maryland to try and make this happen, and how it took a long time for North Carolina to agree to it. When they finally had the agreement between the three colonies to stop growing tobacco for a few months every year, everything seemed like it would work out. The major issue causing poverty would be solved for nearly everyone. All they needed was the king's signature approving it, and the king was actually going to give it to them. But Bacon's Rebellion broke out, and the king decided not to allow this while disorder and chaos ran wild in the colony. So the poverty caused by too much tobacco being sold for too little continued. The governor's council wrote that, quote, "The people of Virginia are generally, some few excepted, extremely poor, not being able to provide against the pressing necessities of their families. The misery and poverty of the colony during this period resulted from the stagnation of the tobacco market after the passage of the Navigation Acts," end quote. The assembly wrote that if words were to describe the conditions that people were living under, it would bring sorrow and force blood from the hearts of those who read about it. Fearing another rebellion in the colony, the king's advisors wrote that, quote, "Virginia is in great danger of disturbance, by reason of the extreme poverty of the people, occasioned by the low price of tobacco, which, 'tis feared, may induce the servants to plunder the stores of the planters and the ships arriving there, and to commit other outrages and disorders as in the late rebellion." End quote. To address these issues, the people would once again ask the king for permission to allow the colonies to stop growing tobacco for certain parts out of every year. This affected the king directly, as England and he personally received tax money from the selling of tobacco in the colonies. The king needed more time to figure out what he wanted to do, so his advisors told the temporary Governor Chicheley to not allow the assembly to even gather to discuss this. But the assembly seems to have pressed the matter with the governor hard enough that he agreed to call the assembly together. Sounds great, at least for Virginia. However, 5 days before the assembly was scheduled to meet, a letter arrived from the king specifically telling him that they were not allowed to gather. The reason for this was that Governor Culpeper was supposed to return to Virginia to run things, and he wanted them to wait until he got there. He also mentioned that the Royal Bank could no longer afford to keep the British soldiers there that had been sent to Virginia to maintain order after Bacon's Rebellion. But the assembly members were already on their way. They were arriving in town with grand expectations of finally bringing the overgrowing of tobacco to a stop. Governor Chicheley accepted the king's orders not to gather the assembly members, but decided to get them all together for a small little casual chat instead. He did this to offer them the option of keeping the British soldiers in the colony at the colony's expense. That was the only reason that he was gathering them. Because of the king's orders, he wouldn't allow them to discuss anything else. When the assembly learned that they wouldn't be discussing the very thing at the center of all of their minds, they were outraged. Here they were, ready to discuss the issue. The people needed them to discuss the issue. They themselves ran tobacco farms, and they themselves needed to discuss the issue. First, the king hadn't allowed them to punish people who had plundered their homes. Then, the king didn't allow them to tax people to make up for their losses. And now, the king wouldn't allow them to even talk about the issue of solving poverty due to too much tobacco being grown. The king didn't seem to care about them at all. The assembly didn't seem to have control over their own lives. They declared that they were there as a last hope of the people, and that if they returned without solving the problem of too much tobacco growing, it would be like a death wound to the people. But temporary Governor Chicheley was not like Governor Culpeper before him. He would not disobey the king. He demanded to know the answer to, and only the answer to, the question of whether or not the colony would pay to keep British soldiers in Virginia. The assembly refused to answer this. They hoped that doing so would convince Governor Chicheley to change his mind and allow them to discuss the tobacco issue. Intense arguments ensued between Chicheley and the assembly for a week, with nothing having been accomplished by the end of it. So, Chicheley dismissed the assembly and told them to go home. Nothing else would be done for the moment. They could, he said, continue when Governor Culpeper returned several months down the road. The assembly didn't have a choice at this point. Because they had no authority to gather and make laws, anything that they did wouldn't be legal. So, they did the only thing they could think of doing. They wrote down everything that had happened during the meeting and voted to have a copy of the events read out loud to the public in every county. Everyone would know that they had not neglected the tobacco issue, and that the only reason the issue hadn't been solved was due to the king's order telling them not to discuss it. All of the king's efforts to maintain order in Virginia were in vain. The rebellion the king's advisors feared did come to pass, and that's where we find ourselves here, the tobacco riots. When the assembly members did return home, and the people learned that they had accomplished nothing related to the stopping of growing tobacco, people began to call for action themselves. In parts of Virginia, Maryland, and North Carolina, people began to cut their own tobacco to pieces without the government's permission. Soon, rampaging mobs engulfed the farms of their neighbors, chopping the tobacco to smithereens. The havoc spread from farm to farm, and soon, not much of any tobacco was left in Gloucester County. When news of the tobacco cutting reached Jamestown, Governor Chicheley sent one of his military officers to Gloucester to summon the military there and restore order. The military in Gloucester County quickly assembled and went after the rioters on horse, capturing 22 of them. Two were placed on trial, and the rest promised to stop rioting and were allowed to return home. The capture of these 22 men quieted the rest of the angry people in Gloucester County. However, news of the tobacco cutting had already spread to the other counties, and the other counties were full of their own angry citizens. Like a flame in the forest, the people took to cutting their own tobacco, just like they had done in Gloucester. And like in Gloucester, they trampled and cut the tobacco of their neighbors' farms. This was only around 6 years after Bacon's rebellion. Governor Chichley couldn't take the chances of letting it spiral into another near-civil war. He immediately ordered the military in each county to assemble and restore order and arrest the leaders of the riots. But the threat of the military didn't scare the people. They continued to destroy entire fields of tobacco throughout the day and the night. When the king's advisors in England finally heard about the tobacco cutting, the king once again forced the pampered Lord Culpeper to return to Virginia without delay. He was given instructions to once again become the governor and find and punish the leaders of the riots. As far as the riot leaders go, there were certainly regular, everyday people who were at the front of the mobs, but there was one person in particular who was believed to be the most guilty of being a riot leader. Remember when Governor Chichley had allowed the assembly to meet, even though the king had told them not to? Well, even though he had only allowed the assembly to discuss the matter of whether to continue paying the British soldiers to stay in Virginia, it was still against the king's orders to assemble at all. And the governor's council believed that it was the assembly's own record keeper that had helped convince the governor to allow the assembly to meet. Beyond this, the governor's council now believed that the same record keeper was one of the riot leaders. According to them, he had been spreading the idea that people had a right to cut their own tobacco. This was the same record keeper who had refused to cooperate with the king's men who had been sent to investigate the causes of Bacon's rebellion. It wasn't a stretch to imagine him acting against the king's wishes now. So, the king ordered his arrest, and he was soon imprisoned in a Virginia jail. A large portion of Virginians saw this record keeper as a sort of hero or a voice of the people. This made the jailkeepers extremely nervous at the idea that some of them might try to break him out. Not only that, but it was still just 6 years after Bacon's rebellion. The people were once again up in arms. Who's to say that another Bacon's rebellion wouldn't break out? Many people on both sides of the rebellion were still feeling the effects of their homes being plundered or their loved ones being hanged. This fear was worsened by what the rebels did next. They cut up the military leader's tobacco in retaliation for imprisoning the record keeper. An act that cost him around 200 to 300 pounds, which is anywhere between 40,000 to 60,000 pounds in today's money, or $50,000 to $75,000 in today's money. The record keeper was kept under strict guard aboard an English ship. As an extra measure of security, the guards didn't allow any letter going in or out of his cell, and he was only allowed to speak in the presence of the ship's captain. But the fear of the people breaking him free and the record keeper leading another rebellion was still too great, so the governor ordered him to be moved to a farther away location in a part of Virginia that was made up mostly of people who were intensely loyal to the king. The risk was still great there, but moving him here considerably lessened the chances of a prison break. But things don't always work out as planned. While the plans for his transfer were being made, he managed to escape and fled home to Middlesex, Virginia. He was recaptured not long after this, and efforts to keep him under guard were increased. The people protested. The record keeper likewise protested. The matter was turned over to the king for a decision on what to do. The king agreed to let him out of prison if he would pay £2,000 as a type of bail. Upon release, he had to stay in the Middlesex area and was not allowed to hold any government position. By the time he was released, he had been in confinement for 2 years. Okay, so back to Governor Culpeper. He finally reached Virginia, and this time, unlike the first time he had arrived, he actually carried out the king's orders. He launched an investigation into the riots to find the leaders and bring them to trial. Although accusations were high, there wasn't enough evidence to prove that the record keeper was responsible for encouraging people to riot. Stopping the riots and punishing those responsible was one thing. Fixing the reason the riots occurred in the first place was another, and Governor Culpeper had no intention of doing this. He actually had permission to stop the growing of tobacco, and Maryland was ready to join them, but he pretended to have not received this permission. He even went so far as to encourage the growing of more tobacco. He reported to England that if the season were favorable, there would be more tobacco grown than had ever been grown in the history of Virginia. He reported that he was confident that England would receive a sum of £50,000 more than it usually did. That's 9 million in today's pounds and nearly 12 million in today's dollars. That amount would be on top of what they usually received. So, the most likely reason for Governor Culpeper encouraging the planting of tobacco was that the king, England, and he himself were making tons of money on all the tobacco that was sold. Governor Culpeper was well aware of the problems this would create for the people in Virginia. In part of his report, he mentioned that he was aware that increasing the amount of tobacco would make it sell for even less, and would therefore make the people in Virginia even poorer. He also promised to stomp out any rebellion due to the increased poverty that arose from growing more tobacco. All of Governor Culpeper's efforts were focused on punishing the tobacco cutters, and punish them he did. To his great disappointment, he found that the man who had run the colony in his place, Governor Chichley, had been soft on the rioters. He had pardoned many of them and allowed many others to be released on bail. The effect was that there was no real punishment for the rebels, and Governor Culpeper had already seen the chaos and ill blood that came from pardoning the rebels in Bacon's Rebellion. To counter this, he ordered the arrest of three of the most famous tobacco cutters. Then he ordered them to be put on trial. Two of them were executed, and the third was pardoned because he was only 19 and was thought to have only been acting on the influence of others around him. Eventually, the king decided that Governor Culpeper wasn't very effective and had been a poor choice as governor. So he declared Governor Culpeper to no longer be the governor of Virginia and declared that a new choice had been made. A man named Lord Howard would be the new governor. Culpeper returned to England and remained there for the rest of his life. Culpeper had been a bad governor. He wasn't as terrible as Governor Berkeley ended up being, but he had carried out scams and had fully neglected the needs of the people. At times, he ignored the king's orders, and at other times, he had fully enforced the king's orders against the wishes of the assembly. If the assembly hadn't been so united in resisting him, he might have crushed the elections as Berkeley had done. He might have terrorized the people as Berkeley had done. Now that he was gone, Virginia was about to receive a new governor, but it wouldn't be the relief they had hoped for. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss Virginia under Governor Howard and how his rule inched the colony closer to the revolution. Subscribe so you don't miss the next episode and comment your thoughts on this episode below. See you next time on Why Wars Happened.